Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed in San Antonio, the most awesome dude in the world. And why am I the most awesome dude in the world? Because every girl crazy about a sharp dressed man. And I'm joined by my co-host, Couture. What's going on, Couture?
Don't do that.
It's too late. I already did.
Okay. Well, I would have stopped you if you told me earlier. Anyway.
That's why I didn't tell you. But, anyway, so the crazy news stories, I guess, have continued for a third week, even though they're not as crazy as a couple weeks ago. But basically, the big news of the week, unfortunately, and it's been a while since we've had to do a show like this, but it's, you know, it's something we'll probably be doing every so often for a long time. One half of the famous tag team of the Fantastics, Tommy Rogers, passed away at a pretty young age, really. And kind of a sad deal. 54 or 44?
54.
Yeah. So, and
pretty,
very young for
a wrestler, though.
Yeah. And from what pictures I've seen of him from, like, not like lately, I mean, he's in decent shape. I mean, he didn't look like he did back when he was wrestling, but he looked like he was holding up pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he passed away in Florida, and apparently...
I thought it was Hawaii.
Oh, I'm sorry. Why did I say Florida? It was Hawaii, because he lived... Because I know, like, on Twitter, Kevin Von Erich would always post about... He would come over to talk to Ross and Marshall and, you know, give them pointers and tell them, you know, stories and stuff. So, yeah, he was in Hawaii. And he always had a tan back in the day, like, if he lived in Hawaii. He's one of those guys who always was fucking tan. And basically what happened is his roommate apparently just heard some funny noises like gurgling or whatever and went to go check on him, and he was just sitting in front of his computer, and he just ended up passing away, and no one knows exactly why. Dave Meltzer pissed off some people because he kind of like added that there was no note like trying to say, like, not saying it was a suicide. Didn't you know that there was no note like saying that it wasn't a suicide, but he doesn't really know what's going on. But people take that the wrong way and thought that he was trying to say he committed suicide. And, you know, who knows if he did or not. It's probably just natural causes, but who knows. But he was in some trouble, kind of shades of Kerry Von Erich before he killed himself back in the day, because he pretty much knew he was going to jail, and Tommy Rogers had gotten in some trouble the last few years fighting, and I think his last fight was he fought with some cops, and that's not a good thing, and that's something you're pretty much going to get screwed on every time, regardless of who you are. So he was facing some time. So, you know, I'm sure the story will come out once they do autopsy and everything, and we'll know what happened. And hopefully it's nothing like that. I mean, I shouldn't even say hopefully. I mean, it's just sad that he died regardless of the situation. But
yeah, I didn't know about any of this. You know, it's legal stuff. You never heard anything bad about him. So.
Yeah, I guess because it was in Hawaii, you know, it was kind of like far away. I mean, when Dave talked about that, it's like, man, you hear about any wrestler getting in trouble. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
As soon as something happens, it's there. You know what I mean? Like last Wednesday, you know, James Storm killed Mickey James, and then within seconds, it was all over Twitter how he killed Mickey James. And
you know, I
read
the description of this show, so immediately I went to YouTube. I said, I guess I better go and watch this. So I just went and found the clip on YouTube, and I wouldn't sit for the rest of it, so I just fast forward to the end, and it was so fucking stupid.
We'll talk about that a little bit. Let's talk a little more about seeing Tommy. I can't see the exact years. It's very, very early 80s. You know, back when I used to watch Georgia Championship Wrestling, Tommy Rogers was like, he's like maybe like what Jimmy Powers was later in the WWE. He was like one of the jobbers that they would allow him to get like a little shine. And by that, I mean he would like, the heel would go to backdrop him and he'd kick him and he'd get some punches, a drop kick, throw him in the corner, get a couple more pinches, go to the other corner and then get kicked or get elbowed or from there and then cut off and beat. But he'd always get that split second of shine. And he was young and he was good looking and he had a good physique. And he's one of those guys that you just kind of had a feeling something, you know, like later on when he got, you know, like more experience, you'd figure he'd turn out pretty good. And the first time I remember him getting like, I can't say this is a push because it was more of just an angle than like a big storyline. Well, his part in it, though, but back in the day, Kabuki and Gary Hart went to Georgia Championship Wrestling, and they were there before they went to World Class, or before I saw them going to World Class, but Kabuki basically was like the forerunner to the Great Muta, and face paint, chucks, the mask, the costumes, all the dramatics. He couldn't wrestle like Muta. But he was over, and he was different. He was ahead of his time, really.
He was scary.
He was scary, and he had an evil fucking manager who looked like he was the devil and evil. And it just worked. It really did. And he didn't...
That Miz was like the coolest thing I've ever seen and the scariest thing.
Oh, yeah, he's the first person I ever saw do the Miz where, like, you know, of course, Muta does it. The Killer Kong did it. You know, different people are the Greek Bookie, the first one I remember doing it. But they were, and he'd always bring wearing like this like hood with like these little metal things all over the hood. And then he'd have kendo sticks or nunchucks or a sword. And they were doing this angle, kind of like, you know, how they would do like the body challenge thing for money or shit like that. You know what I mean? He had the challenge, and the challenge was that Kabuki and Gary Hart would give you his Kindle stick. And Kabuki had these big gloves that also had metal, like little metal things hanging from like his hood did. And basically the deal was that he was such a martial arts expert and so dangerous that even if you had a weapon, all he needed was these gloves and he could block every single blow thrown at him. And you couldn't touch him because he was so dangerous with his karate and his martial arts, and they would have jobbers come. You would get 3 swings, I think. I could be a little wrong, but you would get some swings, and they would bring in a jobber, and he would swing, and he'd throw a left arm and block it, and he'd swing again, and he'd block it with the other one, and he'd block it again, and that guy failed, and then the next week, they repeat, same guy. He'd swing and block, swing, block, and then it came to a time when it was Tommy Rogers, and I just remember, like, he got the stick, and he swung with everything he had, and Kabuki blocked it. And then he swung again, and Kabuki blocked it. And this time, Kabuki turned to Gary Hart, and he shrugged his shoulders. Like, you know, come on, here's another guy, he can't do it. So when he shrugged his shoulders, Tommy Rogers just fucking reared back with everything he had and fucking blasted Kabuki in the back. So he actually hit Kabuki with the kendo stick. And, of course, he got his ass kicked. You know, Kabuki fucked him up after that. But I just remember that little crowd, because it was just that little crowd on two sides of the ring. And they went fucking crazy when he fucking hit Kabuki, because it was like, yeah, motherfucker. And then he left Georgia not too long after that. And then the next time I saw him, he was basically wearing a glitter vest and the, you know, the thing for like the bow tie and the cufflinks,
the bow tie, yeah.
And coming out with Bobby Fulton to Sharp Dressed Man. And in my opinion, they're, I'm not going to say they're the greatest babyface tag team, because I always feel that Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood were a pure babyface tag team. That was like a tag team overall, but babyface. But they were top five, maybe two or three. A lot of people think the Rock and Roll Express are the greatest tag team of all time. I think the Fantastics were better than them. I mean, the Rock and Roll Express. And I saw them have great matches and great feuds. And what were your, like, do you remember your earliest thoughts? Did you see Tommy before the Fantastics, or when did you start seeing Tommy Rogers?
Well, I didn't start watching wrestling until 85, and that was with Crockett. And then I started watching, first time I saw him was the UWF, like in early 86, when he came in, Bobby Fulton came in, and they were doing the stuff with the sheep herders, with the barbed wire cage matches and stuff like that. That was the first time I saw him. I had looked back at some stuff, like the last couple of years when I've been watching a lot of old Memphis, and I saw him, they were using him in Memphis, and he was like the U.S. Junior Heavyweight Champion. He was like feuding with Bill Dundee, and I think that's probably where he hooked up with Bobby Fulton, because Bobby Fulton was on the underneath, like doing jobs on Memphis TV, like for a while there. And then they got together. I think it was maybe, because they were together in 85 with at World Class, right, with the Midnight Express.
Yeah, yeah. And they were part of Watts territory before it was UWF. I mean, they were there when it was Mid-South. And
they were like
I remember
Rock and Roll Express when they left for Crockett. Kind of,
yeah. Yeah. Because a little before that, Fulton was actually like a young babyface getting one of his first pushes here in San Antonio for a short time against like Kevin Sullivan.
And I remember, wasn't it Bobby Fulton and Terry Taylor were the original Fantastics?
That's what I hear. I mean, I never saw anything of them like wrestling or anything, but I've always heard that.
I think they were for the Poffos in ICW in Kentucky when they had their promotion with, you know, Randy Savage. That's where Randy Savage came out of. I think that's where it was, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I remember, like, because they started teaming in Mid-South, and I always heard the story that when they shot that first video to the Sharp-Dressed Man in Mid-South, I've always had heard the story, and I don't know if it's true or not, that's they met for the first time, but I think Bobby told us that wasn't true when he was on. I can't remember, but I've always heard that story. And I gotta say,
they were in Mid South first, and then they went to World Class. They feuded with Midnight Express in Mid South in early 85 or something, or it might have been 84, because Rock and Roll had just left. And then they went to Midnight Express went to. I think at the end of 84, they went to World Class, and that's where Fantastic when they did the feud again there. So,
yeah, it was a little bit after David had died. So it might have been maybe the end of 84. I remember seeing them, like you mentioned, against the barbed wire cage matches. And I'm sure, like, new people, like, because of all the crazy setups and things that people have seen over the years, it's like you hear a barbed wire cage match and you probably think of this thing like the Elimination Chamber, but instead of the metal, it's barbed wire. But that's not what this was. This was, okay, if you're slightly country or have some country family in you and you've gone to their house and they have the chicken coops, it looked like a piece of shit chicken coop, basically. It was wood. Yeah, because basically it was just some 4x4, not even 4x4, 2x4s and barbed wire. And it looked like if you seriously threw them against it, like it would just, you collapse the whole thing. Like, you remember when the Big Show went through the cage, like the whole cage came down. You would think that because this thing looked like it was not sturdy. And you had six guys in the ring because it was, it wasn't just a fantastic Sheepherders. It was a fantastic with Tommy, with Terry Taylor against the Sheepherders and Jack Victory. So there was a lot of people in there. And they would get a lot of color. Both Bobby and Tommy were good good bleeders. And the Sheepherders, of course, you know, they were fucking, that's all. But you didn't have to blade them. You just hit them in the head a few times and they'd bleed. And they'd get a lot of color and blood, but if you really look at it, those matches were very safe because they never really went in. They never did no Cactus Jack, you know, getting tangled in the barbed wire. I remember
Tommy going off the top of the cage like a couple of times in some of those matches. That's about it.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. But that was like the craziest thing. Like, you never, there was more like rubbing the face, you know, instead of throwing into the face, you know, into the thing. But, I mean, still, it was such a spectacle at the time because we hadn't seen Elimination Chamber. We hadn't seen Hell in the Cell. We hadn't seen the Punjabi prison and fucking three cages of terror and all that fucking crazy shit. This was the craziest shit that we had seen up until that point, basically. And, man, those matches were
awesome.
This
was on TV, too. I mean, I was watching this on TV.
Yeah, exactly. It was some bloody shit back in the days between, like, Mid-South and Southwest and all that shit. And
have all these rules now that you got.
Yeah.
No blood and stuff like that.
Yeah. And as good as, you know, the Rock and Roll, everyone will remember the Rock and Rolls against the Midnight Express, the fantastic against the Midnight Express in World Class was just incredible. I mean, they, you didn't have to worry about all the Von Erichs being fucked up and not being able to perform that night because you know you'd get at least one fucking long, awesome work match because they pretty much always get like 15, 20 minutes, it seemed like. And they were just a great team. When I was a kid, I really didn't think much of Eaton and Condrey because it's like as a kid, I'm thinking if I grow up a few years and work out, I could kick both these dudes' asses. But not realizing until later that the reason I thought that was because they were such good workers that they made me kind of believe that, you know, but they were. You know, they were awesome. They were just, those two teams just were awesome. And you remember they had Jim Cornette handcuffed, was it Little John? That big, giant, like, hillbilly dude that was around 5 years.
Silo Sam, what's the other name?
He had a few different names.
I think he was in the AWA, Silo Sam. And he was in Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah, he was a big dude. He just wore, like, suspenders and I think he was barefoot, and Cornette would just
married. He was married to Sherry Martell at one time.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
I think. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah. And, you know, Cornette would be there all cowering because he's Hank's such a big dude. And then,
dude, but he was horrible.
Yeah.
He didn't last long.
And then they you know, had their runs in Crockett and they had good runs, but they were never, like, pushed as a main team. But they had, you know, good matches with Midnight again. And then they had that, like you mentioned it probably a bunch of times on the show, but the fucking Fantastics and the Sheepherders at the Crockett Cup, the first one, had a star match and in a double disqualification. And I don't think that'll ever happen again. And I don't know when the last time something like that happened. Because just
now downgraded that match to 4 stars in the Observer this week, son.
He did?
Yeah. It was a 4-star match.
Well, that's pretty shitty him going back and changing it. Probably
I was there live at the Crockett Cup for that match. That match was incredible. I mean, just the heat from the fans and the blood and I never seen nothing like that.
Would you say it was the best match of that show?
Oh, yeah, by far.
Yeah. Well, what other matches on that show were actually good? Because there was, like, a wide variety. It was like a who's who of who's that in WWE at the time. They even had, like, Dan Baba in the Sawa.
Yeah, this is actually probably, like, had the best, like, roster of talent. Like, I think maybe he's been on, like, on one card ever. that they had guys from all over the place, from like Texas and Portland and, you know, Mid-South and Japan. Now, I remember the Fantastic from the first round defeated the Fabulous Ones, which was a good match. And the second best match, they went up against, they beat Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson in the tournament too, so.
Yeah, they had a hell of a run on that one. Beat the fucking Fabulous Ones, Arn and Tully, and then the double count out with the Sheepherders to get them out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was, I always wanted to see that. I've never seen it. Do you have that on any of your YouTube channels? Do they have, like, the whole thing? Because I know there was, like a DVD, like, a, not DVD, a VHS, but it was, like, an hour, so, you know, it was, like, just cut this shit, you know?
I had found a couple of years ago, I'm going to look this up on YouTube real quick. I found the 2-hour version of the Crockett Cup. And
2 hours isn't too bad. They still cut a lot of stuff, but at least 2 hours isn't too bad.
And you had like 24 teams, you know, in a tournament. So I'm not seeing anything in Crockett Cup, but I don't know why they said they won't put that on the network. They should have had it under like the pay per view or something. Even though it wasn't a pay per view, but still, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. Maybe one day they'll put that shit on. And then like after like that, they started kind of like downplaying them on Crockett. You know, they were still having good matches, but they were, you know, just not being pushed even less than they were. Because like I said, they were never really pushed as a main team. And then I know they had, I don't want to say they split, but I know that Bobby started teaming with his his little brother Jackie. Fulton, and they teamed a bit. And I remember seeing if I am correct, and that's Stone, and remembering that Tommy Rogers beat Bobby Fulton in the WWE.
It was in the first round of their light heavyweight tournament, title tournament in 97 Raw. They got like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, that was weird. That was weird seeing that, but that was cool. And if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he in the fucking Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view?
I think he and Marty Jannetty went up with the Samoans.
Yeah, I think that was like the only good match of the show or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was good. I always liked Tommy Rogers. I mean, like, they always let those up fantastic. And he had a good look. I'm sure he's one of those dudes that, he never had no problem getting no pussy after the show.
Oh, God. I always liked that their trademark was how they spent the first few minutes just walking around the ring, shaking hands with the fans.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I found the Crockett Cup. It's in 3 parts. It's on Daily Motion. So anybody that wants to.
Send me the link on the Facebook chat thing. I'll check that.
Okay.
Yeah. And,
but I think their best series matches were probably in 1988. They had an awesome series with the Express of Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane. Do you remember those matches?
Yeah, they were good, but I actually I actually prefer the Midnight Express team of Eaton and Lane. But I actually think their feud with Eaton and Condrey in World Class was better than the other one, in my opinion.
Yeah, I never care much for the Eaton and Condrey, but I mean, I didn't see like the World Class and Mid-South stuff with the Midnight Express, but the matches they had, and I mean, at their first Clash of the Champions, they had one of the greatest brawls I've ever seen in my life. You know, they were doing moves on tables and doing bulldogs on tables and stuff and chairs and all. It was like something right at the. It was something right out of Memphis, you could tell. Something probably Cornette came up with. And
speaking of the chair, I was going to say, speaking of the chair, Dave was talking about how like he took a lot of unprotected chair shots and that he probably thinks that what is it, DT or, God damn it, I always forget what it is, but the concussion thing is probably had a big effect on his life the last few years. So
I watched... I was watching, because I think this was early in the week. I found this on YouTube. I found like this somebody had posted like an hour and a half of like classic angles from Mid-South, and they had a bit where it was like the Midnight Express were in the ring and they were signing a contract for like a title match with the Fantastics, and then at the end they just beat the shit out of them with. Not the straitjacket. This was a different one. They were just signing the contract, and then they attacked them with powder. And they gave him some brutal fucking chair shots. I mean,
yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And then, like the angle, I thought, like, they were, I guess Jim Cornette was going to be in a straitjacket or something. So, I don't know, one of them or both of them had straitjackets on or whatever, but then they were attacked, and, you know, the Midnight Express, like, beat the shit out of them.
Yeah, they did that in Mid-South. They did that in Mid-South with the Rockin' All Express, but they also then did it, like, on WTBS with the Fantastics in 88, which, quite frankly, they face it looks like a bunch of dopes. Because they were demonstrating the straitjacket, and Bobby Fulton had put it on and you're showing how you can't move, and then of course the Midnight Express show up and they just beat the piss out of them with chairs.
they took a beating. That's what helped make them so good, is they did get their ass kicked.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think they were better than the Rockin', because Ricky overall is the best, and then I would put Tommy after him, and then Bobby, and then Robert. But when you put two and three together, to me, they were just better overall than four, because both of them could do the hot tag. It didn't have to be Robert, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Bobby Fulton was more he came off more as the Ricky Morton of the group, of the team, but they were both very good.
Maybe because he was the better promo.
Yeah.
It was like Tommy was more the silent one, but you knew that Bobby was the more flamboyant one, but you knew Tommy was a better worker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, no offense to our guys, and half the time he forgot he was there until the tag got made.
Yeah, because like Ricky was the flamboyant one, and Ricky was the better worker, so it was like, it was all Ricky.
Yeah, he certainly had all the charisma. Robert didn't have much. So.
Yeah.
Ricky Morton was one of the most charismatic guys ever in the business, I think.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
And it's weird to see him before the Rock and Roll Express, because he's like, you don't see any of that, really see any of that charisma. It's like he's so reserved and everything. But then when you get the Rock and Roll Express gimmick, it's like, you know, kind of came out of the shell.
Have you ever seen any of him and Ken Lucas?
I seen a little bit. I saw him and Eddie Gilbert in Memphis.
Okay.
They had the big.
They had
the concession stand brawl with
Masafuchi
and at Sushi Onita in like Evansville, Indiana. I think it's Evansville one of the concessions. I think it was the first concession stand brawl. So.
Now the tape of it, or the video that you saw of it, was it one of the worst fucking videos ever? I mean, the production-wise, because I've seen it, but god damn, it's horrible because it gets blurry and just, it was
like
off of that
1980 or something like that. So.
The one I saw was like, they had it was that Eddie Gilbert shoot interview where he's in the hotel room, paging Mr. Gilbert,
mm-hmm.
or it has like two different names. Depending on where you get it. But that's the first thing they show, and the video quality is just so fucking. It's like somebody recorded it off of video cam, watching it off of someone's shitty VHS or something. I mean, it was horrible, but you know, I got to see it. But him and Ken Lucas were pretty good. That's where you could kind of, he looked almost like a little kid, but you could tell he had fire, and Ken Lucas was pretty good.
Back in the Rock and Roll Express days, you couldn't get any heat beating on Ricky Morton, and you probably ought to quit. I mean,
right?
He looked like a child in that ring, like when he's mouthing "Help me" to the people. He looked like a kid anyway, so probably you're beating up a child or something like that, you know. So,
now he looks like Joe Dirt, unfortunately.
the hairstyle's got a code, dude.
Yeah, and his hair is all, it looks like it's fucking 100 years old, just the way it looks.
the Matinee Idol looks don't age well, you know, in 2015.
Yeah.
And I've got that, I've actually got that Concession Stand Brawl up in my, I'm trying to find it, up in one of my Memphis playlists on one of the episodes of Memphis Wrestling when they showed that for the first time on TV. Trying to find out which one it is. So, anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess, you know, we could switch over to, like I say, what we mentioned earlier with TNA. They had the big Wednesday Night Wars. It's weird. There's like, what, ROH, TNA, Lucha Underground, and NXT all in one week. And during, I didn't watch TNA because I don't get Destination America, but I just remember seeing all these people tweeting and posting about Mickie James and that James Storm killed Mickie James, and I'm like, what the fuck? And then, like, you hear that he, like, I guess he pushed her in front of the train, and the train made it look like he killed her. And apparently she tweeted today some of her concert dates, so Brian Alvarez is on a tirade on Wrestling Is Ever Live talking about how TNA is this social media company, and they promote social media, and then you got Mickie James, who apparently got killed, and then she's tweeting. It's like, well, come on, dude. I mean, if you're smart and you're going to kill somebody, and you know people are going to be looking for you because you killed somebody, and wouldn't you want to throw them off the trail, like take that person's cell phone and make tweets like they're tweeting, you know, to throw people off the tracks? I mean, come on, it's not that hard to figure out, you know. But no, you got to go on a big rampage about it. And it's like, use your imagination, asshole.
Yeah, I've been saying the little thing, I mean, just something about a Mickie James angle. Cause I hadn't paid attention to TNA for like 2 years, so I really don't care because I don't watch it. I don't care to watch it. And I just, he just kind of bumped her off the side of the, wherever they were, railroad tracks or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
it looked pretty damn stupid.
Well, it may have looked stupid, but after hearing Ryan and Cumberland's call to Wrestling Is Ever Live, it's kind of awesome because he's convinced that James Storms is using some kind of South American drug called Devil's Breast, and that he threw it at her and did that to her, and that's how he's controlling all the other guys because he's using the Devil Breast. Ryan and Mike and Shim didn't have no fucking idea what he was talking about, but he was just going on and on about this Devil's Breath. It was awesome.
Then on YouTube, I made a mistake of looking down at the comment section. Everybody's slipping out and saying how great this was. But, okay, fuck off. Can't read none of shit on that. Jesus.
Yeah. But I'm
excited about the WWE Japan show on the 4th of July that they announced this week.
What time do we get to see it? Like me and you, Central Time. Is Central Time 5:30 or is it, okay?
I think it's 5:30. I think it's 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central. So.
And the 4th of July, so that's Saturday morning.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to go real early to the paper, to the warehouse to get my paper, so I can be home by 5. I think I could do it too. That way, I can see the whole thing. Not that it matters.
Well,
on
it's
going to
be on demand. You can just watch it when you want.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I probably will be watching it when it's live, though, because I'm usually up about 5:30, so.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, and,
I like what they've been doing on the network with this and the Elimination Chamber show.
Yeah, you know what? Every time they go on tour, so I'm like, when they, you know, they always do Raw from Europe, but. And they go to Mexico, they should throw, like, one of the shows on the network. When they go to Italy, they should throw one of the shows on the network. Every time they go to some country, put it on the network and then just, like, make it a, you know, a live event kind of a thing. I mean, I think that would, you don't have to do it all the time. Like, maybe do it once a month or whatever. And I would highly enjoy that. You'd get to see more wrestling then because it's a house show because they wrestle on house shows instead of, you know, I mean, if you I like the angles and everything, but if you're someone who doesn't like the 20-minute opening promo and just want to see matches, this is something you can watch because that's all it's really going to be because it's basically just the taped house show. Like, I'm sure they'll do something on this one because it's the first one and everything, but it's pretty cool. And I'm pretty sure this goes to show that it was supposed to be a Tommy that was supposed to beat Owens for the title because when he won him in the big match in Japan, since he's a Japanese superstar. But they're going with a good replacement in Balor because he's also had a big run in Japan before. So either way, it's good. But you got like Balor against Owens. You got Brock against Kofi, and hopefully he'll not just beat Kofi. Hopefully it'll be Freebird rules, and he'll kill Xavier, Kofi, and Big E. That would be awesome.
And they could put him against Kofi because Kofi's probably one of the best bumpers they got in WWE.
Yeah.
So he can get tossed around and stuff. For about three minutes or so.
Yeah, so it should be good. And I think Jericho's supposed to be on there against Neville, and
that'll be good.
Yeah. I mean, Jericho's good, but one of these days, as he gets older and taking these breaks, he's not going to be as good as he once was, probably pretty soon, but hopefully this will be a good one.
He's gotten to the point where he comes back and leaves so much as kind of takes away from him because you know he's going to come in. You know he's probably going to lose. Just put somebody over. So
yeah,
so it's kind of hard to get excited sometimes about when he shows up. You know what's going to happen. So anyway.
Yeah, it's not like a surprise anymore, a big thing anymore. It's just okay. He's going to go do some concerts, and when he's done, he's going to come back. And but yeah, it should be. I'm pretty excited. The Elimination Chamber, I was actually had higher hopes for than I had for, like, the last few pay-per-views, but I thought it sucked. The tag team elimination match. The chamber match sucked, especially because it came down to the New Day against fucking Titus and Darren instead of Tyson and Claudio, who Claudio was a thing in that whole fucking match. Kalisto is, if you're going to come up with some crazy shit, why don't you practice that shit before you try to do it live on pay-per-view? Because, Jesus Christ, that dude just fucked up the whole match, dude, in my opinion.
Just reminded me of Bumsack,
so goddamn
Bumsack,
long
Cajun,
to do everything.
Bumsack, Cajun,
yeah.
TNA.
Yeah,
he's
not
seeing him, but yeah. He found the Cajun TNA, and he was up there for 15 minutes, but like, yeah, but those chamber matches,
as far as, they
were very clunky, I thought. I didn't think they were very good.
As far as flying, Torito showed that he's a much better worker than Kalisto, because Kalisto, he just was pissing me off in that match, dude. Seriously.
But just because he's gotten over and he's been very good so far, so you expected more.
Well, that fucking chamber match didn't help him. That fucking, God, that was annoying. He's either really good or he's really off on everything. You know, I mean,
I was wondering at the end, is that the most black dudes they've ever had in one WWE ring at one time fighting each other?
It might be. It might be.
Well, they had like about 7 or 8 in the nation at one point when they first started.
They had like 12 or 15 in the nation. Remember, because they had like they even had like a chick or two, and they had all the fucking just. I don't even know who they were, but they just be in the suits like they were part of the.
They were just random dudes.
Like,
D'Lo. D'Lo was the only one who knows.
Yeah. But yeah, they'd be like fucking 15 of them. So that's probably the most black people in a ring. But as far as wrestling, yeah, this one. But that was a disappointment. The fucking main, the Intercontinental one, that match put me to sleep, actually. That match just fucking, I don't know what the fuck was going on. Like, Mark Henry, like, when they broke Mark Henry's pod, and, like, first he acts like he's going to come out, but then he doesn't come out, and then he rushes out, and then they don't know what the fuck's going on, and then you think they could have fixed it by just putting, a few seconds later, they did the light switching back and forth in the music. They should have just put it on Mark Henry's pod, but no, they went to whoever was next or whatever, and then it just threw everything off, and
It made sense for him to come out because he looked kind of stupid just standing there with the door open, especially Mark Henry.
Yeah.
Because he should be
no one else. But no one else knew how to react to it. They didn't know what the fuck was going on. And then also, between that show and Raw, I thought Sid Vicious was wrestling every match because of all the fucking spot callings I heard throughout the whole fucking shows. Did you notice that?
I guess I didn't. What matches were these?
There were matches on the Chamber. There were matches on Raw. Just people were fucking calling spots loud left and right. It was crazy. It wasn't just John Cena this time. It was everybody. But yeah, like I thought the Intercontinental match sucked. The only really good thing was Cena and Owens, honestly. That was fucking awesome and a surprise. And
I'll put that right behind Brock and Roman Reigns and the three way from the Rumble as the best WWE match this year so far.
Yeah, it was good. Cena's like the fucking is like the current like Ric Flair just as far as putting people over now. I mean, Jesus Christ, you can't ask more from the dude. You know,
he's having great matches too.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about John Cena being a bad worker. He's out there having great matches. It seems like every week, just about.
Right. Yeah. And then I thought that was bullshit, all the criticism he got for pointing out that kid in the audience. The kid wanted to be pointed out because he made a sign to say that. I mean, that was his goal, and you're going to say that he was exploited. He was not exploited. That kid had the time. And then he got to go in the ring after the show and hang out with John Cena or during the commercial, whatever, and stuff. I mean, that kid has a memory for life. But somehow he was fucking exploiting Cena was a piece of shit for that.
John Cena probably would have been a dick not to point that kid out, you know?
Yeah.
People are going to just... I'm never bothered by that. I know, like, reading The Observer, Dave gets bothered by some of that stuff. I always thought that some of it gets publicized, some of it doesn't, but... As long as it's doing something, helping somebody, I don't care if it's used or something like that. You know, like on TV. Somebody's getting something out of it, not just being used and they're not benefiting from it. You know, they're getting something out of it, and that kid probably at the time of his life. So that was awesome.
Yeah, and then. And then, like, another thing where people just go crazy over the stupidest shit. Did you hear about the Jeremy Borash controversy from this week?
Yes.
Yeah, well, basically, Jeremy Borash posted a photo of Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce. What the hell is his name? Bruce Jenner. Yeah, Bruce Jenner. Well, he became Caitlyn, and it's on, Vanity Fair, and it's the most fucking airbrushed fucking magazine I've ever heard. But you don't hear no, like, every time Kim Kardashian or somebody's on one of these covers, you're like, oh, my God, it's airbrushed. They don't look like that. They don't, you know, they make a big deal about it. This is the most airbrushed photo I've ever seen because it looks like a painting than a photo.
Mm-hmm.
That's how airbrushed it is. But, oh, my God, it's the greatest magazine cover ever. But basically, he posted that photo with EC3's face instead of Caitlyn. Is it Caitlyn? Bruce,
yeah,
whatever you want to call he or him. So people, you know, saying that he's homophobe and he's this and that, and anyone who, like, kind of laughed at it or said, like, this one Texas girl wrestler, Barbie Hayden, made a comment, and then everyone's skewing her and accusing her of being anti-gay and hating gay people, and she did no such thing. It's like, come on. You can make a joke and not be fucking a horrible, horrible person. You're just trying to be lighthearted. This PC shit just drives me up a fucking wall. You know, I made a post basically where I was making fun of the airbrushing thing. And, of course, Alex Goff has to respond and make a whole big thing that it's because I put hashtag he doesn't really look that good. Because if you've seen Bruce Jenner before his transformation, he's an old, ugly dude, an old, ugly, wrinkly dude, and now he's somehow a bombshell? Well, he's because he has makeup and airbrush and all that stuff. And that's what I'm making fun of. But no, and then because I put he gets into argument because it's she. And look, I have no problem with transgender people. You can do whatever you want. You can be gay. You can. I make jokes, cracks, or whatever. But I don't have a problem with gay people. I don't have a problem with transgender people. Okay? But all I'm saying is, to me, until he's completed the process, he's still a man because he still has his penis and balls. And to me, you know, you have Y and O chromosomes or whatever, he's still a man. Now, he's transitioning to be a woman, and if he has a surgery and becomes a woman, fine, I'll call him a woman. But because Bruce Jenner calls himself Caitlyn, that doesn't automatically mean it happens. Like, I could come out and go on Twitter and say, I am now God, okay? That doesn't make me God, okay? So if I go on Twitter and say, I am God, I expect Alex Goff in Vegas when I see him in a month to refer to me as God, because that's how I see myself, the way Bruce Jenner sees himself as a woman, as Caitlyn. You know what I mean? It's like they make a whole big argument over nothing. It's like, fine, the dude can do what he wants, great, but don't. You know, he's being, in a way, exploited because he got all these magazines. Like, ESPN's going to give him the Arthur Ashe Award. You know what I mean? He deserved the Arthur Ashe Award when he won the Olympics. I don't think I think there are plenty of people who aren't as famous, who don't have his name, who don't have this controversial story behind them, that are much deserving of an Arthur Ashe Award than Caitlyn Jenner. You know what I mean? I mean, if he wants to live his life that way, that's fine. Go ahead, enjoy yourself. But don't make him something he's like. It's like when that one gay guy that was a football player got drafted and everybody made such a big deal about him. I didn't have a problem with it because he was gay. I had a problem with it because how is he being gay better than every other person in that draft? How is that makes him more attention than, you know, if he's a hero to gay people, that's good. But don't make it more than what it is. I mean, he wasn't even good enough to make the team. What about the people who were number one picks who made the team, had great seasons? You didn't give them shit during that draft. All it was the one guy because he was gay. And you used that to promote, you know, whatever. But it's like, to me, I get upset when I feel people are being treated better because of something like that. It's like, he's a football player. He's no different than the guy who got drafted in front of him or behind him. They're in the same category. But because he came out as being gay, they made him this giant hero. And if he's a hero to lesbian people, gay people, great. But that doesn't make him a superhero. He's a football player, just like every other person in that draft. And I hate when people get promoted like that. Like, I don't care that Bruce Jenner is becoming a woman. He gets on my nerves when it's the main story and there's a lot more important shit going on in this fucking world than some rich guy who's transitioning to be a woman.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's my little rant. So I don't even know how we got here, but, you know. That's
just
how
I know what you're saying. I mean, I don't have anything against one of my best friends is, like, my best friends in the world is a gay. I mean, I don't think I got anything against gay people. I mean, the whole transgender thing, you know, becoming a woman, that's okay. That's fine. I mean, it's not my thing. I'm always going to think it's weird. And people want to get mad at me for thinking it's weird. They get mad at me. I don't care.
If people are offended because we think it's weird that we would want to cut off our penis. I don't want to cut off my penis. I like my penis.
I know. I get. Never mind. Anyway. Get a lot of use out of it. I just said, I was over at my parents' house and I said, Bruce Jenner's a woman now. And I just, she said, oh, God. And doing it at 65 years old, it's like, why even bother that late enough, you know, to figure out your gender?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's just not my thing. I don't. If it makes somebody happy, that's fine. I'm always gonna think it's out of the ordinary and strange and weird. That don't mean I hate anybody for it. I mean, it's just odd. It's just odd to me. You know.
Yeah, but we should probably stop before. Because I'm sure in a couple of days, Rover's going to be calling us.
I was just thankful because I opened my, every day when I have my Kindle, like, open, they got, like, just, like, they got something they're selling. That the first thing pops up on my Kindle, and it was, like, the Esquire magazine with Caitlyn Jenner. And I didn't really know the story. I knew, like, I'm just, like, heard in passing, like, maybe he was having some gender issues. I didn't know if he's. I didn't know if it was like he was transgender or he was gay or something like that, and I saw the picture, and I mean, I couldn't really, but who's Caitlyn Jenner? And then I just kind of looked it up. Okay.
Yeah, because you look at him, he's got so much makeup on the airbrush, it looks nothing like Bruce Jenner. Because Bruce Jenner, if you've seen him on the Kardashians, he's an old wrinkly guy. And he might not even be transgender, he just might be confused. You know, you live with the Kardashians for so long, that'll fuck your whole mind and world up, dude. Yeah.
Yep.
But, so I only set the show for an hour, so we got just over 7 minutes. Let me get the plug out of the way real quick. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show for at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Marks Show and pretty much just the show pretty much every night of the week. So check out angrymarks.com. You can also download and stream our show at blogtalkradio.com/Catrere and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, and you can follow me on Twitter at Ed in San Antonio.
You can go to youtube.com/Catrere. I've got a bunch of old wrestling videos and stuff up there. I've been adding about once a week, I've been adding new episodes of Memphis from 1989, so that's some good stuff there if anybody's into that. And I got 4 years of Memphis from like around from like 1980 to 1988. So anybody wants something to watch, go check that out.
Cool. Well, before we go, I wanted to mention that I'm really excited for two Sundays from now, 2 weeks from now. I'm going to be driving back to Austin for an Inspire Pro Wrestling show. And they're actually kind of loading this show up. They're bringing in Leva, of course. So it's like one of the second, the semi-main is Leva against Veda Scott from ROH for their women's championship, which that right there is pretty much getting me to go. But then I found out they're having a four-way, and one of the guys in this match is fucking Teddy Hart. And according to Leva, he always brings his cat. So I am so excited to fucking meet Teddy Hart's fucking trained wrestling cat that sits on the turnbuckle the whole match while guys are beating the shit out of each other, bouncing off the ropes around it, and it just sits there all cool. And I was talking with her the other day, and I was like, you know, I'm your biggest fan, but goddamn, I'm more excited to fucking meet this fucking cat than to see you. So, yeah, hopefully, I mean, I hope he lets people take pictures with the cat. I don't think, and then to even just talk to him, because you know how fucking whacked out and crazy he is. I mean, that'd be an interesting conversation. Yeah. And then they're going to have Lance Hoyt against Ray Rowe. So that's the definition of a big mean guy match. They'll just be clubbering each other. It's going to be like a really good show. I can't wait to go check that out. That's going to be fucking awesome. Yeah, this Inspire Pro Wrestling, man. They really bring in like people. Like the last show they just did, they brought in Joey Ryan and Candice LeRae, and they bring in like a lot of people, which is cool. Like when I go to the shows here in San Antonio, which has been a while since I've been to one. They have good shows, but it's just hard for me to want to go to an indie show where I don't know anybody. You know what I mean? Like, I know Hernandez. Like, they got Hernandez and that's it, and it's all local people. And now there's a lot of, like, there are students. And like I say, when I've gone to these shows, they are extremely good, but it's just like, I don't want to, it's just hard to go. Whereas Inspire and Anarchy in Austin a little bit, because, you know, they've brought in Leva and Solo. They, you know, they'll bring in a few people, but Inspire, they really do bring in people. And then they have this really nice fucking theater where they run the shit. So it's really top-notch, man. So anybody who's interested or likes any wrestling and wants to see something different, look into getting some Inspire Pro Wrestling tapes. They're really good. And the announcer is this guy named Brandon Strood, who's kind of like a comedian kind of guy. He's fucking hilarious between matches and real quick-witted. I mean, the dude's funny. And he's also like a blogger. He blogs about Raw and NXT and shit. And he is one of Rover's biggest targets. And even though, you know, he has Rover blocked, he always has to, you know, people quote or, you know, favorite or retweet. And it's just Rover's just constantly all over this guy for whatever. And me and him have just had some big laughs about it. In that, you know, when I've seen him at the shows, or he was like at WrestleMania, and I made sure to take a photo with him so I could tweet it to Rover and stuff. So, yeah, it's pretty funny. But before we go, do you have anything you want to talk about at all?
No. That's it.
Well, okay. Well, I was hoping you'd have at least one thing. We got 3 minutes. Shit. We apologize for Craig not being here. He had some graduation or something he had to go to. And it's funny because on my Facebook, I'm seeing a lot of graduation photos, or maybe not like high school, or like kids going from middle school to high school. Just all of these fucking photos from all my friends. And it's like, I think I'm like the only person who from my class who hasn't gotten married or had any kids. And it's like so weird. It's like, they're making me feel very fucking old. Like, I don't think of myself as old, but I guess I am now that fucking some of my friends have kids who are graduating and shit. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, I'm trying to think if there's any... Oh, did you read the Ben Miller article?
Yes.
What did you think of the Ben Miller article?
I don't know. I just enjoyed. I went to every day. I didn't know about this until I went to sheetsandwich.com, and they had a big article about it. And he's just like, he fucking flipped out over nothing, really.
Yeah. I know Ben. I've met the dude many times. Sometimes his work used to send him here for like a few days, and we'd always have like dinner and just bullshit and. He's one of these dudes who just likes to argue, you know,
mm-hmm.
who will argue anything. The sun will be right above you at noon, and he'll argue that it's really the moon and it's at nighttime. You know, that's just how much he likes to argue, and he can't admit that he's wrong, even if he knows he's totally fucking full of shit. And, yeah, it ended up with a lot of entertainment, and even Brian and all these other people from the site are like, you know, fucking laughing at him and telling him how stupid he sounds, and he just won't give up or whatever. But yeah, that was highly entertaining.
I know
if you remember,
he was on Twitter calling somebody a piece of shit because of nothing really, and then he was on the board, and somebody had did, like picked apart his article on the front page, and had. It quoted like each like point, and then like give a rebuttal, and he got the way that it was done by the you know by quoting like each little paragraph or something. He said it was cowardly or something like that. And I didn't understand
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
neither did anybody else was playing on the board, so it was kind of stupid. And
then a little later, it's funny because like Brian was throwing little jabs in here and there, and then. There's a post, and the post is basically just a period because he had edited it, but somebody beat him to the edit and fucking, you know, quoted it. So the next post, you see what he takes like a jab at Brian and stuff. And I was fucking with him on Twitter. I go, what does, and I quoted the period. I go, what does this mean? And he responds, it's a period. And then I have to respond, So you just post random periods on the board? And he didn't post that. It was an edited post. And then I tweeted him, don't be afraid to call that psycho midget at Brian Alvarez an asshole. I do it all the time. But, yeah, it's...
First off, if you're like a fan that gets their article posted on the front page, it's going to get a lot of criticism, no matter who you are.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a rule now. It's going to... And if some of the stuff is bad, I'll admit that sometimes I wonder how some stuff makes it on the front page, but still,
you can kind of see after this what why Todd Martin and Ben Miller are best friends, because they have a lot in common.
I know people were taking Ben Miller to a porch or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's a cool dude. I mean, I like Ben. I get along with him great. He's fucking actually hilarious. But like I say, he's just one of those dudes who will argue anything, even if he knows he's full of shit, and he will argue it till he dies.
I just saw that when somebody had taken and picked apart his article with the quotes, and then somebody just posted a boxer getting knocked the fuck out, picture of a boxer.
Yeah.
I laughed my ass off.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, yeah, that was funny. But we'll be back. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, Craig will be back to join us. You never know with Craig.
No, we got to preview another pay per view next week.
Oh, we do. Oh, that's right, we do.
Money
hopefully
in the Bank.
That one will be better
is a week away, right?
Yeah. It should be next week.
God, these shows. I'm glad I'm not Dave or Brian. I have to cover all this stuff. All I got to do is watch it.
Right. I don't even watch it half the time. I just listen to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's more entertaining to listen to them than to actually watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
But, I guess we'll be previewing that, and I'm sure there'll still be more craziness, with TNA still around, anything can happen. It's just insane. So
that was a good angle to put on when your show's threatening to get canceled. Somebody threw Mickey off the train or on the train tracks. Jesus Christ.
Right. Yeah. The best thing about Impact right now is Mia Yim's little shorts. And with that, we will let you go, and we'll be back next week.
You gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the matrix shit. Let's go hook him up. Tonight.